Okay, let me start with this title. And I arrived here, I joined you last Wednesday. And then by that time, I didn't have any foil. And then since then, I collected. And the latter half contains really new data of super solid. But my intention is, anyhow, to study super solid under rotation and to see vortices. So in order to let you understand what we are thinking of and actually what we have been doing, let me review some of our activities. And this is the super solid experiment so far reported, and I have gathered that these people are doing experiments. And actually, ISSC, my group, consists of a rather small number of people, but we are operating relatively large facilities like these two rotating cryostats, which records, so to say, world records of rotational speed. And so we are studying superfluid helium 3 as well as helium 4, mainly film systems. And then we are also considering some new superfluid possibilities in various systems. And so in that view, I hope you can understand what I describe. Namely, I'm talking about this helium submonolayer film, very thin film, on which is, if it is formed, ideal Coleridge Taulis two-dimensional superfluid. And starting from this Coleridge Taulis 2D films, by having the 3D connected surfaces, we are constructing a 3D superfluidity, so to say, without almost condensate. So that's of course relates to the question of what's superfluidity and what's the relation between BEC and other questions. And this system, this film in condensed on 3D connected surfaces, studied by various people, but we found out that some picture. I can see it on my screen, but I can't see it here.
Oh yeah, I can see something there.
Yeah?
There's a little ghost of something there. That's all right, so go ahead.
Yeah, but you say go ahead, but it's not very, very nice because some part of the important picture is not seen.
Those lights are over there, but we're not gonna. That's a resolution issue, I think, on the screen.
Yeah.
Show us your screen.
Turn around your computer so you can have.
The. Actually, there's a similar structure here, and then. This picture shows that the two-dimensional film is formed on top of this part of these structures. Whereas here, the particles are sitting in between the holes, and it is regarded, it is described in terms of the lattice gas model. But this criterion can be drawn by the intercomparison between the thermal wavelengths of helium to the size of these porous systems. And this has been actually experimentally cleared out by studying various different kinds of for a study, for a media. And but anyway, both systems show three-dimensional superfluid transition. Although the character is very much different, and we are so to say concentrate on ourselves the system where we can start with really two-dimensional films. Here, you have to start from the beginning some sort of a three-dimensional DEC.
So I just want to make sure that lattice gas model, the lattice is the set of sites where the tubes are crossing. Is that the idea?
No. Actually, it's dilutely dispersed. That's the picture. Because some of the void wavelength is beyond these four sizes for this system, so that the whole system can be regarded as a uniform, so to say, gas. That's at least the idea of John Rippey's dilute Bose gas, and there are corresponding theories to that, I think.
So I see why that's a gas. I don't see where the lattice comes in unless it's the...
No, well, you in that respect, this picture is fine because this structure disappeared.
So you think it's just a gas model?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so my story is that 3D superfluid made of monolayer helium films. And of course, we would like to discuss relevance or connections to the question of the super solid super fluidity. But for such systems, there are quite different kinds of critical speed. And for some things, I'm not sure really what it may mean, but at least there are two distinct angular velocities which are defined for the study of vortices under rotation. Namely, this omega C1 is the angular velocity over which a single vortex comes into the system. And this contains this R. R is the size of the tube. So this is dependent on the our experimental cell. Whereas this omega C2 is the critical angular velocity over which these vortex cores are overlapping each other so that it destroys some, in this case, three-dimensional coherence, so that it destroys 3D superfluidity. In addition, there are many different velocity, not angular velocities, but I may come back, but I will go on. And in order to describe our systems, there are different kinds of length scales. And for example, vortex core size has different features as other systems. This A2 and A3 refers to the two-dimensional vortex core and also three-dimensional vortex core. And these are experimentally obtained. And at the same time, we can discuss the coherent things for different dimensions and so on. And in the superfluid, we can discuss about the thermal excitations like phonon or bosons or some other possible excitations. And these systems are like what I mentioned, this dilute gas system, corresponding to the dilute gas system has been studied by this Rippey's group, and we started some 15 years ago, 16, and actually Shirahama was my first doctor course student. And with his work, we could determine definitely this two-dimensional vortex core size. And also, this kind of system has the superfluid transition temperature, which is primarily determined by 2D features.
So you're deducing the core size from the omega C2? You said you can experimentally determine A2.
A2? How
can you do that?
No, this is the evaluation of the two-dimensional vortex cores from the viewpoint of the Costa-Lewis Pauli theory.
How can you evaluate it from Costa-Lewis Pauli?
Okay, I have to. Okay, it's a little bit too much. Therefore, I would like you to read this paper.
Or probably
Costa-Lewis. Actually, yeah, you should get on to your solid helium, right?
Yes, right.
You should get too much side effect.
Yeah, there are so many fundamental questions, and there might be a lot of questions, but let me go on. And then I would like to actually be criticized or be accused or whatever. In order to evaluate 3D coherent things in our systems, we studied this discussions by these people about this helicity modulus gamma and the Josephson's coherence lens xi in a 3D superfluid. And they discussed this free energy changes as actually spring constant, spring system energy for the twist of the phase of this superfluid. Whereas the same quantity can be described as a kinetic energy over the this volume, whereas this superfluid velocity is expressed in terms of the gradient of the phase. Therefore, we can write it down in such a way, and then this proportional constant gamma t is expressed in such a thing. And this has a dimension of energy per length. And the length scale lambda, which represents a length scale of the fluctuation in the system, in this case, the fluctuation of the phase, can be expressed with a typical thermal energy, so that the lambda times the gamma is kBT, from which one can obtain this characteristic length for the fluctuation as expressed in terms of rho s, and then other physical principal quantities. And this formula or can be expressed with T, but you can simply exchange T with TC without having trouble for this temperature range.
Upstairs, of course. You can't place T with TC for rho s.
Let me see.
I'm just saying rho s of TC is zero, so obviously you don't want to use that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if we look at this, this part is the temperature range where we can discuss in such an expression. Anyhow, by torsional oscillator measurement, we can determine our superfluid density in the absolute quantities. Absolute quantity means kilograms per square meter. So from which we can determine this Josephson's length in the absolute unit. Actually, this is still for 1 micron system and 10 microns porous glass. So such a big power system shows also 3D super free transition, and from which we obtain this xi, in this case expressed in centimeter, and it shows critical behavior. And for the different power size systems, actually it's always larger than the power size. The xi, yeah, it's a little bit complicated, so I skip it. Okay, so although our system is composed of submonomial thin films, completely two-dimensional in a sense, with such a large pore surfaces connected to three dimension, we can think of 3D features. And this picture is not very good. Actually, this is the torsion oscillator dissipation peak while changing this amplitude. And for the range of the amplitude until some value, it's delta Q inverse, dissipation peak does not change if it expressed in terms of this Q inverse.
So that's the dissipation peak, but it's only right around TC, right around there.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks completely different than what Moses has. Like,
okay, this is typical Costa solid syndrome.
Yeah, but there's some deviations from a typical Coxsackie Taurus, and actually that's what I should explain. This linear dependence, which means that over the range of the excitations or velocities, this Q value doesn't change, and above certain values, it starts to increase. And so this is actually evidence that you are exciting something else than the vortex pair movement.
Wait, I'm confused. I thought you was, the analysis you've done up to now, you were saying that the system acts three-dimensional, and that's because the correlation length is longer than the pore size, right? So
okay, you are right. You are right.
So and Costa Taurus would have to do with this data.
Okay. At the temperature, at the temperature below which these three-dimensional coherence is established, the whole system behaves like a three-dimensional superfluid. Whereas this above certain temperature, the 2D features still remain. So that you can excite 2D vortex-antivortex pairs.
You mean if you go to a temperature that's such that the correlation length is shorter than pore size?
Right.
Ah, okay.
And actually, this is the this linear response region is in such a region. Okay. Actually, this is plotted the same thing, and this number one dissipation peak is the static peak, which appears. In the linear regime of torsional oscillator, and this superfluid density corresponding frequency change or period change appears as
is that the filling there? When you have there's six curves, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that the
that's what I shall explain you from now. These are the data under rotation, but this AC velocity is in the linear regime. That means in the very small AC excitation regime. But under rotation, you will see new additive peak appears.
Yeah.
next to this statistic. So this is the actually indication of the existence of 3D vortices. And this is described in the recently published paper, so I would like you to look at it. But my major point is that this response is quite different from this response. And this is the response. This is non-rotating data. And the same thing is plotted, but with quite a different or wide range of AC velocity range. So linear regime exists here, but the AC velocity range is so large, you can see already the change of the superfluid density. And I believe that similar thing is seen for the case of super solid data. But there are, of course, different features. So anyway, my point is this maximum AC velocity is 4.1 centimeter per second. Whereas this peak, 6 is 1 revolution per second, and cell diameter is 1.5 centimeter. So linear velocity at the edge of the torsional pendulum is very much faster here than this one. But you do not see any change in the superfluid density. And if you think of the cause of these phenomena, it is quite natural. Here we are exciting 3D vortices. And the number of vortices are at most 10 to the fourth in our system at the highest speed of 1 revolution per second. And as you can see, it's very much smaller than the number of atoms. Whereas here, we are exciting something else. We don't know yet what this is, but most likely something like a vortex shrink in our system. And actually the critical velocity, which we can evaluate from this point, because for a certain velocity, we do have some temperature from which dissipation starts to appear. And this critical velocity is well, actually checked with some other methods as well. And we believe that this is something like a vortex ring excitation. The other method to study this critical velocity is the flow measurement. And we haven't really done the quantitative analysis to this yet, although this publication is quite old. This is rather complicated, as you can see the graph, but we make a superflow by a temperature gradient, and this is the source of the film, and then we have a steady condition, including the vapor path in the system. But the measure that temperature difference is between this superflow path, and so from which we should be able to study the superfluid velocity. And actually, this delta T is plotted against the Q dot here, and this data is for different temperatures. And actually, this is 1,022 millikelvin. So, and then goes down to 825 millikelvin. So lower the temperature, it comes down, but we do see some critical something at a certain temperature and at a certain velocity, and which fits reasonably well with the other critical velocity pictures. And we can roughly say how much is the critical velocity. Okay, now let us come back to the real question of the supersolid. And we are thinking of a study of supersolid under rotation. And my very primitive idea is expressed in this last LT's proceedings. So if you have interest, please look at it. But the major idea is that we should be able to observe the three vortex lines as long as this static dissipation peak is present and it interacts with the cause of this interacts with the DC flow, which is caused by 3D vortex lines. Just the same as what we have seen in the case of our polar system. And actually, before going to next, from the superfluid density of the absolute values, we can roughly estimate these 3D coherent things, tokens from the length, and even as a function of temperature and so on, and which tells us that it's on the order of a few hundred angstroms. And this may tell us that the similarity between this bulk experiment results and also this results in the vehicles and so on. Actually, that's the point which was also pointed out the some of you on Friday. Okay, our torsional oscillator has quite a common features, but somewhat different sizes, and we plan to measure the pressure. This is the cell, and then we plan to measure inside this solid helium cell. So the cell diameter is 8 millimeter, and the cell height, inner size, so, but and this total volume is something like 200 milli 0.2 cc, but because of this pressure gauge, it has a 0.16 cc effective volume. And this is the response of our torsional oscillator for the introduction of the liquid, solid helium. And remember what's the deviation of change in this frequency. It changes from here to here some 3 hertz. So with the, our internal pressure gauge, we could monitor the crossing this...
It's not showing up.
Oh, wow. I can see it here, but sorry. What shall I do?
You can turn the computer around, most of us. I think you can see the screen.
Can you see it?
Oh, yeah.
But, okay.
You could try to adjust the screen resolution, or else we could look at your talk tomorrow.
Well, you could point the camera down. Okay.
This does.
This shows up. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, this is the first view graph which I received last week, and so this is the empty, and then 40 bar sample is made 40 bar, but I cannot guarantee you how much accurate. Accurately 40 bar for the moment, but it's let's say 40 bar, and we studied at 8 micrometers per second, and 11 micrometers per second. And even with these small AC velocity change, we saw some changes. And then this is somewhat smoothed out, and then we added some more different measuring AC velocities down to...
Is it the same data, average longer, or is it a different set of data?
This is the same data, adding more data, that's all. I mean, empty data is the same as...
But you also time average the other data.
It's less noisy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
So did you ask the student to average?
No, I didn't ask, and actually he did it. Because,
it's the same set of data.
Yes,
11
right.
11 micron per second, 8 micron per second.
That's right. Here appears the same number.
11 and 8 are the same set of data. But
right,
this
that's right.
It's a lot cleaner.
Sure.
Is that really frequency you're plotting?
Yeah, it's frequency.
Yeah.
Isn't that going the wrong way?
Well, frequency goes up, right? When the period goes down, it's frequency goes up. It's the right way.
Well, it's going down, isn't it?
Oh, you mean that?
Yeah, that's going down the frequency.
Sorry,
this
but
is empty.
This is empty. Oh, I didn't know what this was.
This is empty.
Okay.
This is 40 bar.
All right.
40 bar, but different.
And then you see velocity effect also, because the smaller drive, the change is bigger. Something wrong with the empty cell here.
Right. Well, there's the same kink on the red one too.
Same kink on the red one.
Oh, higher.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. We still have some problem. I cannot answer you why. So this is a expanded view and.
And if you subtract, you get sort of.
So this.
Yeah.
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 So
that
this is the data plot at 120 millikelvin.
But this, so therefore, if you go to lower temperature, it will be larger.
What? Yeah, I compare with your data, so, but the compare, This graph can be compared with this graph, and not with others, but.
Yes, you can, you just plug it in. You in fact compare with others. The top three you can compare. Or with the velocity, sorry.
Yeah, it's velocity. And the data, compared data at 120 millikelvin. So I cannot say very much, but so this is 41 bar, and our data was taken at 40 bar, so it's roughly this one. But the temperature, this is 0.1, so we are measuring just this range. And I don't know this velocity dependence is similar to what you
thought. So looking
what
at that profit, but, data looks comparable, right? Because
that's
you have
right.
0.12%, and then from there to there, you increase by a factor of 10. So.
Right, that's right. So we are looking at a factor 10 smaller data because of the high temperature for the moment.
What about student 3? So amount is the same?
0.3
ppm.
Yeah, we Japanese are importing the 100% helium 4 from US. So.
You mean 100%?
So it should be 0.3 ppm.
0.3.
Yeah.
Right. You mean it's not especially pure, but it's just.
That's right. That's right.
Isn't the effect much larger here than CHAN data?
No. You have to see that.
Is it 100%?
This is percent.
So that's 10^-3, which is.
And so we have to see just this range.
No, you're saying that it's approximately the same because
velocity.
Its temperature is saturated at 120 millikelvin. So the curves he's shown before, this is 120 millikelvin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So roughly.
Go to that other one.
Which one? Which
because
one do you?
Show you the R data. Yeah. So this data is just from here to here.
Yeah. Okay.
But wait, his maximum NCRI percentage is
somewhere here.
1.2%
here, and then the other curve is not percent. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so oh, right. Oh,
two
oh,
is
another decimal place. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 200.
So what is the annealing history?
Actually, this sample was cooled down to hit this melting curve, and then it was annealed overnight at 1.6 Kelvin.
Okay, so that's also longer annealing time than John
Rutherford. I don't know exactly how long he annealed it, but. And actually, the melting curve is something like 2.2 Kelvin. And so last Yugash shows that some I've seen that in the this movies that some people are afraid of small critical velocities to see the effect on the rotation, but this number doesn't change very much. Actually, this is rather large number, and so small reported critical velocity should not disturb this observation.
What kind of rotational speed will you do? What is the rotational speed that you'll
frequent? We can go up to 3 revolutions per second, but I don't know. If it vibrates or linear velocity appears, then of course this critical velocity, which some of the people discusses, may come in. So. But my point is, it is different from this AC velocity and DC rotational velocity.
Why?
I have shown you this example.
Yeah, we are very. I'm very slow, so
okay.
I didn't get that.
The example was, of course, not with super solid, but with our film system. So. This is the AC velocity sum from very, very slow velocity to maximum speed is 4.1 centimeter per second. Here, this is a response for the DC rotation. With AC excitation is rather small in the linear regime, so that this range. But the DC velocity is 1 revolution per second, which corresponds to this is a diameter is 1.5 centimeter, and 1 revolution per second means
that was in the
second.
So much larger.
Pi times 1.5 is about 4. If you do 1 rotation a second, then you move 4 centimeters.
Okay. No. Okay.
But that is many, many times. I mean, that therefore that's many, many times of quantum circulation. Why is it not important? I mean,
at that rotation frequency, you have a lot of vortices in the system. You have one.
Right. Here we do have a controlled vortices. Yeah. Controlled number of our vortex lines.
This is liquid. This is liquid film. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The critical velocity is very large.
What?
The critical velocity in liquid film is very large.
How do you know? The if you look at this graph, which shows a similar thing of the slowest decrease by this AC velocity, and this is the velocity which you are comparing. So what I'm saying is that this 4.3 centimeter per second is a nearly the critical velocity for this system, in your critical velocity sense.
So you are saying
but,
that
this DC rotation
you are
does
saying
not
that in generating vortices, DC rotation is very different from oscillations.
Yes, right.
Based on your result.
That's right.
So what you're saying?
That's right.
But here, your experiment is that this is, you're already rotating and then you oscillate.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's the experiment we are planning for.
Well, okay.
But if you see these peaks, they'll be...
Yeah, that's another question. But we have actually studied where this rotation peak appears. And this is the function of the core size. And from which one should also learn what kind of three-dimensional vortex penetrates in the supersolid. Please refer to this paper. Well, please read it. So that's about all, but am I confusing you or?
On flat substrates, like Bill Glaverson did these rotating a flat substrate in torsion laws, mm-hmm. right? When you see something sort of like. Like there's an effect due to putting in static
vortices. Certainly not, because in the 2D system you cannot introduce a 3D vortices.
Not 3D, but I'm trying to remember, I thought that the data for the dissipation peak when you increase...
No, actually they observe a slight change of the dissipation appearing just next to the static dissipation peak. And so the appearance is completely different. So my major question and is that here we have 3D super free, but practically no condensate. Well, if it exists, it's very very small fraction. And I think this is more general status of super fluidity, isn't that right? Then we might find something else, too. That's my story, which I would like to talk to the younger generation people and excite them to search for it. And also, that applies to you theorists. Yeah, I would like to have some response. Not immediately, but
well, we could applaud.
Thank you.